I think we shy away from the word making a profit in farming. We shouldn't be doing that.
Maybe it's exactly what farming needs, because we carry on growing the same things every year because that's what we've done before, right?
I would really hope that the government sees Minette's report as the start of a conversation.
The Farming and Food Partnership Board has met twice.
I know we want to be positive about everything, but I think it's important to be real. It's tough out there for everybody at the moment.
The reaction to it has been a little bit mixed within farming.
I've never known anything like it. It's actually completely heartbreaking, if I'm completely honest with you.
I'm in a household where very much would like to farm without subsidy. And I think that, like you're saying, Ben, is that actually achievable?
If people feel that they're being spoken down to, you haven't got a hope in hell, to be honest.
This episode is brought to you by our headline sponsor, Virgin Money. Virgin Money's experience in agriculture goes back generations. They offer tailored financial support, including funding and loans to help you diversify, as well as solutions to manage your everyday farming finances. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Meet the Farmers, The Big Debate. I'm Sophie Gregory.
And I'm Ali Hunter-Blair. And wow, there's been a lot happening since we were last here. Last episode was Groundswell, which was fantastic to do in person. But this week we are going to be talking about harvest. We're going to be talking about weather. We're going to be talking about, obviously, politics. We have an entire new government, a new prime minister. And we've got lots of reports that have come out that they seem to have shoehorned in together. We've got the response to Minette's farm profitability review. We've got the Farming Roadmap 2050. And we're going to be digging a bit deeper into what that means for us as farmers and whether we think it's a step forward. We've also got Ben Briggs on, who is going to be giving his insight into that, which I'm really looking forward to. And we're also going to touch on Farm Safety Week, which is happening this week as well. Big thank you, as always, to our headline sponsors, Virgin Money, and our associate partners, Birkett's and Tellus Agriculture and Consumer Goods. For context, we're recording this on the 23rd of July, and it will go out tomorrow on the 24th of July. If you don't already, and you should, please subscribe to the show and our mailing list. It's in the show notes. Now, Sophie, I think I know the answer, but there's a new picture, so maybe I don't. Where are you this week?
I am in my spare bedroom at home, actually. Sorry to disappoint. Oh, it seems ages since we last saw each other. We have been pretty busy on the farm. We've whole cropped. Have eaten any grass that was remaining on the farm, and Wendy the wagon has been reappointed to feeding the cows, which I mean,
for our non-farming audience again, because I know we have got a few. Wendy, your feed wagon is a very much wintertime occupation, so you're saying that you'll have got to bring it back out. Is that the problem?
Yeah, Ali, nail on the head there. Sorry, it's a feeder wagon, and in our type of system, we rely on grass growth, so we're turning grass to milk, and the wagon is a way just to taxi the grass in the winter. So we're not pleased to see her. No one likes Wendy, but we're going to embrace her because she's the only way actually I can feed my cows right now. So like everyone else in this farming community in the UK, and I think a lot beyond as well, the weather is playing a bit of havoc. How about you, Ali? I can only imagine that it's pretty tough out there for you guys combining.
Yeah, I tell you, the biggest thing for us is the loss of potential. 6 weeks ago, we were looking at what I thought was a pretty good harvest. Everything looked mega, actually. The wheat particularly looked awesome. Spring crops had a bit of rain in June, and everything looked magnificent. We've now got the combine in through everything. Actually, I think we've probably got 3 days combining left and then we'll be done. This is unheard of. We should basically just be starting our oilseed rape now and we will be finished. I think actually we may even finish earlier, and people are referring it to like our version of 76. I think we may even finish earlier than Dad did in 76. But yeah, yields have just gone. Spring crops are awful across the board. I've got a new worm in my sugar beet, which means I think by the end of this week, I won't have a sugar beet harvest. I've had to go out with an insecticide, which I hate doing, to try and stop them. I might try and send a photo in so somebody can put it in. But I've never seen, and in 50 years or however long Dad's been doing this, he's never seen it before. Our agronomist has never seen it. Like, yeah, it's brutal. If I'm completely honest, I'm at the end of my tether with the whole lot. I'm pretty much done. I'm having to do dairy farmer hours. We're combining at 4 in the morning on the river. Normally the river is wet and it's still only 11% moisture. We need it, obviously every percent of moisture we lose weight. We're having to stop by like 10, 11 because the straw is getting smashed. I've never known anything like it. It's actually completely heartbreaking, if I'm completely honest with you. After last year, I mean, our wheat has done slightly better than last year, so that's a good thing, but the bar was set very low. Last year was terrible. The only saving grace is that prices are going up. So if I'm honest with you, I'm completely miserable about farming, but I'm here, we're doing it. We will be finished early, and then maybe I'll be able to go on holiday with my kids at the end of the week. So you know what? Positives. But I have not enjoyed the last fortnight, to put it that way.
It sounds absolutely miserable, Ali. And yeah, with prices going up slightly, that will impact the whole supply chain, won't it? It's, you know, I'm reading that actually this is globally now going to be a problem. What's in AHGB reported that French soft wheat forecast of 30.8 million tonnes down 8% and German wheat forecast 21.9 million tonnes down 5%. So, you know, Europe might seem a million miles away, but actually a lot of this is a global market now. Prices are set, aren't they? So, You know, yields might be down, but you might get a little bit more money for it. But that's just that won't be enough, will it, Ali?
I mean, it's nice to see prices above 200 again, to be honest. It can make a benefit, you know, and the positives are we're combining everything dry. We haven't got any drying costs because obviously fuel has gone through the roof again. We bought some fuel in 2 weeks ago at 78p a litre. It's now up to 96.5. So, yeah, input costs are still going up. But yeah, prices have gone up. To see £200 a ton off the combine is pleasurable. makes it feel slightly less bad. But we aren't the worst affected by any margins. I've been speaking to a lot of neighbours. It's amazing that's what I love about this damn community, is that when times are tough, we almost are more communicative than when times are good. Big farming neighbours are experiencing exactly the same. They've got yields that are worse. Anywhere that with a bit of clay has held on a little bit, it's across the board in my sort of neck of the woods. And then you look at the guys, poor guys over in like Norfolk and Suffolk that didn't get any rain. They're experiencing the worst harvest that they've ever had. I spoke to somebody yesterday. His oilseed rape, which is normally it's a low yielding crop comparatively, has out yielded his winter wheat in Kent. Now that is, and I said, oh, brilliant, your oilseed rape must have done really well. He's like, the oilseed rape did do well, but not well enough for the numbers to be good enough for it to out-yield my winter wheat. So yeah, it's tough, isn't it? And it's tough out there at the moment. Now, we're going to move into our big topic or big topics of the day. We're going to be talking about the response from the government to Minette's farm profitability review. And we're also going to be talking about the farming roadmap. Now we're going to move on to the big discussion of the week, which is the Farming Roadmap 2050, which is Growing England's Future, kindly brought out by our wonderful government. But we're not going to do this alone, Soph, because we need help and guidance in this. And we are delighted to say that Ben Briggs, Associate Director of Pinstone and former editor of the Farmers Guardian and general agricultural communications guru, is joining us. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, guys. Great to be with you.
Now, Ben, could you give us a little bit of an overview of the farming roadmap, why it was commissioned, what it is, before we sort of try and delve into the depths of it?
I think the farming roadmap is that brilliant piece of political reporting, really. You realise that a lot of these exist within the confines of government, right across the government departments. So the Farming Roadmap 2050, Growing England's Future, is ultimately a 25-year strategy intended to provide a long-term strategy for farming in England. And it uses buzzwords like it wants farming to be profitable, productive, sustainable, and resilient. And it really sets out a number of steps about how we're gonna get there. But when you read the report, Ali, it's really interesting because it shows the next 5 years in quite a bit of detail. So it talks about expanded environmental and land management schemes, more investment in innovation, improved biosecurity, that kind of focus on soil and water management. But the reaction to it has been a little bit mixed within farming itself. There's a lot of pontification, really. There's a lot of forward thinking about the why and what we want to do and what the government wants to do for farming. But there's not a lot really about how we get there. And I think that would be a criticism of many reports that come out of government, because quite often they're stakeholder-led, they're almost like an intellectual exercise in many respects. And actually, how we interpret that and how we get that back down to farm level is the real challenge. So yeah, it's a big piece of work. It points on to things that the government's already doing, like reviewing the bovine TB strategy and lots of other pointers along the way. But to a certain extent, it kind of ends at 2030, and the rest is quite hypothetical. So it's a long-term vision. It certainly had a lot of thought go into it from a number of parties. But as I said, there is that feeling a little bit that it is detached from the realities of farming on the ground.
Yeah, I like the vision of it. I think, the whole profitable and productive, environmental, sustainable and resilient, like, they're real buzzwords. But I mean, to a farmer on the ground, is it just another report? Because I think, like, as you're just touching on there, direction of travel rather than a fully costed delivery plan. I mean, is it actually achievable? Is that what I want to ask, Ben? Do you think it is actually achievable?
Well, I think that is the criticism that these reports always come in for, because ultimately they're quite often created within that kind of policy vacuum, aren't they? I mean, this would have been worked on quite a bit in the past, and if we reflect on the changes of this week, we've got a new Prime Minister, Andy Burnham, in number 10. We've got Angela Eagle, who's come back into DEFRA. She was the Farming Minister, now she's a DEFRA Secretary. So Emma Reynolds is on the way out. So you've got this kind of wholesale change again at the head of Westminster and within number 10 Downing Street. And the challenge then for reports like this is, you know, these could have been effectively first drafted maybe 18 months, 2 years ago. It took a long time to come out, didn't it? The farming industry was kind of waiting on tenterhooks for it to emerge. So, yeah, it's really fascinating. I often think that the impulse behind them is often really worthy, and it comes from a good place. But it's like everything. How do you make this resonate with farmers on the ground? You know, I'd be really interested to know from you guys how you feel about it, because you're facing up to the realities of farming in one of the driest summers we've ever had after incredibly wet winters in certain areas. So farmers are often focused on the realities of the here and now. So a kind of report that's laying out something for the next 25 years, I mean, that can feel very, very detached. And I think that is a challenge we have within government. I think that Burnham, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a northerner as well, but, you know, I think Burnham understands to a certain extent the need to take policy from the administrative halls and back into the industries that they represent. But doing that when you have a civil service and policymakers who are so entrenched, who are quite often careerists in the chosen area, is so difficult. So yeah, taking it out of the abstract and bringing it into the reality of agriculture is always going to be the challenge, Sophie. And it's one at the moment. You hope there's going to be progress towards it, but I think we're all realists, aren't we?
It's this split, and actually we've just whinged about the weather before we've done this bit, because it has been so dry, and it's the here and now versus that long-term planning. We've talked about it a lot on the podcast that farming is generational, it's long-term, you need to have some sort of plan. We've whinged a lot about on the podcast about the fact that everything changes so quickly, and as you've just mentioned there, obviously we've got a new Prime Minister, new government, new top team. This report was probably started to be thought about by two prime ministers ago, almost. You know, we're in a totally different situation. The civil servants are still the same, you know, so you still have the same group of people doing the thinking, but the leadership changes. I think for me, the big thing is it does a really good job of pointing out all our problems, which is, I suppose, the here and now. It has done a very good job of being like, you know what, farming's tough, and there are issues within it. I don't think it gives me a huge amount of hope, if I'm honest. And I don't know whether that's just me reading through it or just because I'm tired and fed up with the weather. The big thing for me, I suppose, is the move away from incentive to regulation. That's the big thing that is hitting me. At the moment, we are incentivized through SFI and other schemes to to do public goods, to do greater goods, to go above and beyond to create better food. I like the fact that obviously they have finally realized that food and environment have to work hand in hand, but profitability still has to come first. We'll be talking later about Minette's review. They mention it thousands of times that they want agriculture to be market driven. Agriculture must be market driven. We're going to remove, you know, subsidies going, goes gone, incentives will go, regulation will come in. So you will have to do this to get to these parts. Maybe it's exactly what farming needs, because we carry on growing the same things every year because that's what we've done before, right? We carry on. I'm growing crappy cereal crops at the moment, very crappy cereal crops at the moment, because that's what we think we should do. We're providing food for animals, yada, yada, yada. Is that really what we should be doing? Is that what this is suggesting to me? Being like, well, actually, the market doesn't want that. Why don't you grow something better? It's a case of going, well, okay, we are going to create that. But if we have so much regulation around it, then does that put people off trying to do something new? I don't know. There's a part of me that goes, they're creating this vision, this dream of the future that goes, right, it's the classic Labour thing, if I'm honest. It's the, you're going to do more for less again. And that less is going to be regulated. So you're going to have to increase your yields. You're going to have to find where your markets are going, but we're going to pay you less to do it. And a part of me then goes, okay, why am I even interested in the roadmap? Why am I then going to go, you know what, sod the government, frankly. Let's go and do what I need to do for my business.
Do you know, Ali, though, I think I find it really interesting. And when you say this is a typical Labour thing, I think you can trace all this back, way back to when we had, Michael Gove doing his polemicist thing within DEFRA, where public money for public goods, increased greening, you know, free marketeers, really Tory free marketeers, you know, the market will provide. But we know fundamentally, and I know that from my time at Farmers Guardian and coming from that farming background, is that if you leave agriculture purely to the whims of the market, you know, we see it in dairy all the time, don't we, Sophie? You know, the absolute roller coaster that the dairy markets go on, where one year you can be reaping the dividends of a booming milk price because of fears over supply, and then the next year you're on that downward curve. So to me I am not sure whether in government now or 10 years ago with Gove there is enough of a recognition around domestic food production and the importance of food security, and I'm not sure that the farming roadmap really taps into that. I think it looks in a very worthy way at processes such as regenerative agriculture and what an organic and what that can do for long-term soil health. But farmers, as we know, often operate in the here and the now because they're facing the challenges either of the weather or the prices they receive. So I think trying to take some of that ambition and communicate it in a way to farmers that actually resonates and in a way that actually works is going to be a really, really challenging thing. And interestingly, during my work at Pinstone over the last 12 months, we did a big piece of market research called Pinstone Pulse, and that was all around sustainability and many of the themes that kind of occurred within the farming roadmap. And it was really interesting when you talk to farmers, because if you used up the wrong language to communicate some of this, they just turn off straight away. So yeah. you could have the best policy in the world, but if you can't talk to farmers or you use the wrong language, then it is lost on them. And then to your point, Ali, I think a lot of farmers are now thinking, actually, I'm going to try and mitigate farming policy and regulation. I'm going to farm in a way that's within the rules, but is increasingly commercial. And he's going to ultimately help my bottom line. So I don't think then that policy necessarily comes into it at that granular level. It's a bit of an umbrella, isn't it? It's a bit of a guiding light. You know what you've got to do and what you can't do. But I think a lot of farmers are just trying to crack on now and really monetize what they've got as much as they can and if they can.
I mean, that whole comms bit is so important in this, because I think we have had so many reports, haven't we, recently in this space, and a lot of them have taken a long time to come. So some reports have overtaken other reports because they've been quicker to be finished. I want to touch quickly on the bit about regulation, because I think, in my view, as a farmer on the ground, if you regulate me, push me in a corner and don't work with me, I think that's when those boundaries are pushed. Does that make sense? I think we need, like you were touching on, Ben, we need, and I hope Burnham does this, but we need people on the ground involved in these kind of reports. We need very much, you know, farmers actually being involved at all steps. And if we are going to be more regulated, farmers need to be involved in that process, because I think otherwise there is a huge gap, isn't there? And I find that a bit challenging. For me, the whole subsidy piece is challenging. I think I'm in a household where very much would like to farm without subsidy. And I think that, like you're saying, Ben, is that actually achievable? And do the government communicate the food security thing as well as they probably could? Because I was actually in Parliament last week and all they spoke about was food security. I don't feel that on the ground as a farmer. So they're having that conversation, but as a farmer, I don't feel valued, if that makes sense. I don't feel that that actually is their focus. What's coming out, they're talking about it within government, but it's not coming out to us and it's not coming out through policy. So where is it breaking down? This report doesn't really clear it up for me, if I'm honest. It's just an ambition. I don't know if it's costed well enough in their minds. You know, I think it's an ambitious project, but really, is Burnham going to pick it up and be like, I think farming needs a bit more money putting behind it? It's a challenge to me. I think the only actionable report that I've seen come out recently, two reports, one being Minette's report, that is actually, and we're going to dig into that next, things that have actually been action straight away. And that's great to see. And then another report that was commissioned by Oxford Farming Conference, Louise Manning's report, is actually readable by a farmer. I suggest anyone here goes and reads it. And it's all around mindset. And I think a lot of these things come back to how you feel valued on farm, because I think they're having that conversation in government. We aren't feeling it on the ground at all. But if you connected those with the right policy behind, we might actually have the opportunity to work together to make some good changes.
But that's where the regulation thing is so challenging, because an unregulated farming sector is also terrifying. A completely unregulated farming sector is a scary place to be. And that's, we don't want to go back to it. But your point there, Soph, about communication, that communication is important. Regulation is required. And I am completely with that. And whether that is stricter or less strict, it's not the fact that we're going to have more of them. It's the way that that regulation is on farm. As you said in that EA pod, so if you get a good inspector who is happy to work with you and can see that you're trying, or, you know, is there to actually offer guidance and point you in the right direction, as opposed to coming with a clipboard and saying, right, you've got this, this, and this wrong. This is, you know, you're going to get fined for this, and we're going to basically put you on a red list. Then, as you say, you then put farmers back to the walls, and well, it's fight or flight at that point, and a lot of farmers would fight. That's where I think, yeah, your communication piece, and it'd be interesting to see Ben's opinion on this, because he is a communications expert.
I feel really uncomfortable that I've reached a stage in my life and career where I'm now seen as a comms expert. But maybe I'll be on the consultancy thing for the next 20 years.
We can call you some other things if you want, Ben.
I get called lots of things. You know, communication to me is absolutely vital in whatever you do. And I think that, you know, as a journalist for more than 20 years and then the last couple of years working for the likes of Pinstone and in other roles within the industry, you know, how you communicate and how you speak to people is absolutely crucial on all levels in life, isn't it? And I think that, you know, I looked to when I was at Farmers Guardian, I always used to position the magazine and the newspaper as kind of there to speak on behalf of farmers. I was the farmer's friend. You know, we had an incredibly talented team who I was very, very lucky to work with and to manage, but who had that skill of being able to sit in policy briefings and then interpret it as to what it meant for farmers and communicate it in a way that landed with them. I wasn't there to be a critical friend to the industry. I was there to kind of disseminate it to the people that I knew. So it might have been my friends or my family, because you have those people around you who are constantly going to keep you in check. You know, if I'm in the if I'd have been in the pub on a Friday night and somebody was criticizing me for what appeared in FG, then that kind of brought me back down to earth. I think one of the realities around documents like the roadmap is that they're created by people who don't necessarily have that natural understanding of the industry and crucially the people within it. And I don't mean that as a criticism against them as individuals, but that's their reality in their lives and in their careers, isn't it? They're in a different form of bubble. And I think that what we need in the industry is those people who can operate on both levels. So you can operate at the highest level in terms of policy and government, but ultimately bring it back down to farmers and what it means on the ground. And I found it fascinating in the kind of the political obituaries to Keir Starmer and to Rachel Reeves, just how much now the inheritance tax debacle has been raised as one of the key missteps of that early tenure of the Labour government. Because, you know, we all knew it was in agriculture, but it came from a place that viewed agriculture purely from an economic and a business perspective. It forgot about the people and the families and the generations of effort that goes into those farming businesses. And I think, therefore, you know, when we come to look in a moment about the farm profitability review, that's where people like Minette are so good, because they, A, the farmers, but B, they can operate on both levels. And we need more of that in the industry, because being able to communicate, being able to talk both languages in a way and being somebody who is trusted is absolutely key. And I think also that is a key thing, is trust. You know, farmers, and I think societally as well at the moment, we don't trust those people who are in power. So when they try and come with something, you know, and to the point you've both made about regulation, if you try and hit a farmer with a regulatory stick, you are just going to get a really bad reaction. But actually, if you explain it in the right way, if you talk through the incentives, if you talk about how this is going to give us a license to farm, and, you know, and it actually might keep away even more draconian regulation, you can cut through some of it. But if it's top down, if it's communicated in the wrong way, and if people feel that they're being spoken down to, then you haven't got a hope in hell, to be honest.
And we're going to move on next to the farm profitability review, which we have done a whole episode on, but I think it'd be good to pick it up because since then some things have actually been actioned. And let's remember that this report was commissioned back in April 25, and we've already seen some action, which I think we've already touched on a bit. These reports often can be shelved, but it seems that government have actually picked up on this and really driven forward. So the first one, I think, action announced and then action. We've had the Farming and Food Partnership Board has met twice. How does everyone feel about this? How are we feeling since we've had our episode on this? Do you feel like it's been, you know, used usefully?
I think the government are more pleased with themselves than potentially we are. I think one of their opening sentences is, since the review was commissioned, we have made significant progress. This response, Ben, I'm very intrigued to hear your view on it. This response, it almost feels like a back-patting exercise. It feels like they've read Minette's report, which is a good start. Don't get me wrong, a good start. And they've gone, you know what? She's actually quite good at this. Let's agree with pretty much everything she says and say that we are going to do something towards it.
It feels a bit like when you're asking your kids to do something, isn't it? And they're like, well, I've already done that. So, you know, yeah. Fine, and I can move on. But I think there are elements from the report that are a positive step forward. I think the Farming and Food Partnership Board, I think you are actually starting to see that kind of collaboration across farming, food, retail, and finance. There was the really interesting launch at Cereals of the Wild Farmed Incentive, which brings together some of those kind of players from the supply chain to invest in. That's in the region ag space. I think the role that private finance plays going forward is going to be a key thing. And I think government wants the private sector, so the banks and the retailers, the water companies and others, to kind of step in and fill some of that funding. void. You know, we are seeing more investment in innovation and technology grants as well, which is a really positive thing. The thing that always struck me about Minette's report, you know, 57 recommendations, but I saw her speak at an NSA event last year where she spoke about a need outside of the recommendations to acknowledge the role that kind of farming plays within the social fabric of rural areas. And I know this is something that I will kind of bang the drum for, but I think that's a key thing that Minette recognizes and goes a little bit back to what we were talking about before, in the sense of recommendations and policy implementation is fine, but we have to give farmers the kind of confidence to invest and be able to access that funding in order to drive their businesses forward, because they're not only just about the kind of what they do economically for rural areas and the country as a whole, but it's the important role they play in communities and that wider thing within rural areas as well. You know, we've got to remember that the Common Agricultural Policy pumped £4 billion into farming in rural areas, didn't it? We had £3 billion in direct payments, but we also had another billion that kind of went into the rural hinterland and targeted pockets of deprivation. And for me, you know, that's gone. How do we replace it? And how do we have a kind of regulatory and policy environment that touches on all those needs? Because it's not just a black and white issue, is it, in rural areas? It's not just about farming as a business. It's about farming as part of that rural community. And you know, we face challenges around things like affordable housing in rural areas. How do we retain staff? How do we keep people in areas? So I would really hope that the government sees Minette's report as the start of a conversation and wants to speak to more people like her who really understand both sides of the coin, both from a policy perspective, but also crucially the people within rural areas as well, and the people driving those businesses. Because if we just treat it purely as a business sector and as a commercial enterprise and lose sight of the people behind it, I think, you know, we're going to lose sight of the motivations and the drivers that exist within farming. But I mean, you guys are there on the ground every day. How do you feel that? I mean, what's your view on Minette's report? But also, I mean, crucially, that response to it as well.
The Farm Profitability Review seems a generation ago in terms of what's happened since it came out in December. I think I said at the time I thought it really highlighted, in plain English, what the problems were with the current sectors and what the problems were with agriculture. I liked it. I know there was a lot of criticism about it as well, about it not going far enough. And that was something that we did mention, that whether it didn't delve away from what we currently do enough in terms of, it wasn't game changing, I guess. That would be probably the one bit of criticism. It was a well-worded review, and I have a huge amount of respect for Minette, as we've said before, but there wasn't anything revolutionary in there, would have been probably my one criticism of it. It was sort of, yeah, keep moving forward. The response, I really liked the bit that you said there, Ben, about like when you ask your children to do something, they say, I've already done it. It feels a little bit the same with pocket money. It feels like, well, we've given you this. We'll give you this much. Can I have some more money, please? And they're like, yeah, no problem. We'll give you 30 million for a farm collaboration fund. We'll give you 200 million towards. We'll launch SFI again. Well done, us. It feels a little bit like, we take it all on board. We're actually already thinking about it. So I don't really know why we ever had this commissioned, because we had it all under control. It feels a little bit like that. But that said, we're sort of ranting about the fact that there's so many documents out. It's nice. Like, from a farmer's point of view, it's actually quite nice to see that they are obviously spending money and focusing on creating these reports. You know, these things don't happen for free. I did try to find out the cost of them, and I think I've got to do a Freedom of Information request to get that. But people are throwing money at farming in terms of writing documents and trying to work out where our future is. And that is positive. So, yeah, I sit on the fence a little bit, as I always do. But I like the idea that people are actually considering us. I don't necessarily think it's revolutionary enough to save the industry.
They're two very different reports, but they're both about our sector and what we do inside our gate, outside our gate, you know, 24/7. But with Minette's using the word profitability, I think we shy away from the word making a profit in farming. We shouldn't be doing that. Profit is not a dirty word, and profit is what enables us to pay wages, protect cow, you know, protect welfare, all of those things. We need it. So the response from the government, I'm glad they are actioning some of it, even if it is, you know, giving kids a sticker when they go to the dentist, you know, that kind of stuff. It doesn't feel too like that it's their idea. I don't want it to be run away that it was their idea. But Minette, it is readable by a farmer. The roadmap concerns me more, I suppose, because it's just a direction of travel. There are no fixed points where they can be held accountable to it. I would have liked food security to be higher up within it, because I think that we all respond as farmers, we respond on the ground daily to problems. I think saying it's a food security and public security, country security, actually makes people make change quickly, because it's like a thing that is right now, we need to have some action. So I would have preferred it if they had brought more of that within the roadmap. As you say, Ali, having lots of attention on writing reports, my worry is we spend so much money on these reports that removes money that could have been spent on the actions out of them. We'll wait and see. I think this first sector growth plans on the poultry and the horticulture, let's see how they get on with those. Let's try and understand actually if they have really listened. But the roadmap, we'll wait and see.
The reality, I think, Soph, is that we as a nation, world, are firefighters. So we react. We don't plan. So I think all this food security stuff for me is really important. I think it's really important. But as we have found out, like if we talk about it, people just are totally disillusioned and totally disinterested in it. People don't see it as a threat at all, because they can walk into Tesco, Asda, Morrison's, food is on the shelf, right? And until that becomes an issue, and I don't want to, I'm not pleading for UK-wide hunger here, but until people walk in to a supermarket and stuff isn't available, no one takes it seriously, because all they think is farmers whinging because prices are low, and that's that general consensus is that, you're just whinging because the price alone, you're not making any money. Well, yeah, absolutely I am, because actually if you want us to invest and do all these other things you want us to do, then we need to make money. Absolutely, profit is a dirty word in farming, and it shouldn't be. But unless we have some sort of food shortage, we're all just going to go along with, it's just a load of nonsense, we'll just keep importing it. It'll be fine. Like, it'll be absolutely fine. I don't know why everyone whinges about it. Then suddenly, like we talked about it earlier in this episode about the weather, you know, I think we're sleepwalking into a serious situation at the moment. Like the arable yields here are poor. There is no grass. There's no rain in the forecast. And that is very short term, but it could cause some serious shocks. Wheat prices on the rise. Like it could cause some serious shocks short term. And the other countries that we're looking at, they're not doing particularly well either. Europe is burnt to an absolute crisp, quite literally in places. America's struggling as well. Until we get that sort of shock therapy, I don't think that we will ever truly appreciate how good we have already got it in terms of what we can walk into and buy.
Yeah, I'm interested in, so the sector growth plans, we've talked a little bit before about, but they're going to touch on poultry and horticulture first. I mean, I can understand the horticulture. We're talking all the time about needing to innovate and support that sector, because we are, you know, in terms of food security, it's something we really struggle with, is growing our own here. Climate change, but also electricity costs, all of those things we've touched throughout. But the poultry one surprises me actually, because as a sector, and what I'm understanding from others, is that it's in quite a good place. So I'm interested in why we think actually as a whole that has been chosen as one of them. Maybe it's because it's an easy one to, you know, to see some something doing well already. It's easy to sort of, you know, tick that box. I don't know your feelings on that.
Do you think it's because it's the easiest to measure? That's what my sort of thoughts were, because especially if you go down the broiler chicken road, it's a pretty closed system. It's a 42-day system. You've got food in, chicken out. External variables are minimal. Okay, weather does play a bit of a difference. These heat waves have not been helping, but realistically, you are in a shed. The shed is climate controlled. You're putting you're putting feed in, you're getting chicken out. I'm like, they've just picked one that is going well because it's a nice one to do. Like the majority of chicken in the UK is broiler, and on a spreadsheet, it looks quite good. You don't have to worry about the fact that it hasn't rained for the last 6 weeks and it isn't going to rain for another 3 weeks and there's going to be no grass and our wheat crops are like, you don't have to worry about that. Okay, you have to worry because the food price might go up, but then the chicken price will go up to match it. I that's what I wonder. The horticulture one, I think, though, is much more interesting because that is, well, massive. You know, horticulture as a sector, just from the variety of things that are grown, it's almost the exact opposite of poultry in terms of you can go from, I don't know, tender stem broccoli to apples to cherries to, you know, it's to vegetables to, it's, there's so much within horticulture that it feels like they've almost gone, right, let's go with one that's easy to measure and let's go with one that's impossible to measure and then we'll sort of meet in the middle. And then, yeah, there's no mention of arable because no one gives a damn.
Yeah, you're probably right, Ali, aren't you? In the sense that they are quite, poultry is an incredible sector, isn't it? How they've been able to commercialize that, just the pure turnaround on those animals. So yeah, it's very data led as well. So yeah, it's quite easy, isn't it? You know, we're not talking about upland sheep production, are we, or things like that? But I think that's one of the interesting things as well, is that you're starting to see some of that, a little bit of a disparity where you have those kind of really what I would say are professional farming sectors, chicken and, you know, dairying to a large extent now, given the size of the herds. And then you have this other element where you have, some of the beef and sheep sectors are really hard to quantify progress within them. I know of some reports looking at certain elements of the sheep sector, and the available data is really, really difficult. So therefore, as a government and as regulators, you're not going to put that number one on your list, are you? Because it's just much more difficult to deal with and much more difficult to quantify, given the nature of the businesses within that. So yeah, we'll see what happens. But I just love these. I just love the buzzwords: profitable, productive, resilient, sustainable. I mean, they must be repeated 400 times in every single report or white paper you're reading at the moment. But just how we get there, given some of the climate challenges and the vagaries of the market, is going to be really interesting.
Now, I do want to just, there was the one thing, because I think we should be positive, because these things are being talked about, which is great. The one thing that I did see was the Farmer Collaboration Fund, which jumped out at me because we've been working with our neighbours now for 20 years. We do a lot of machinery labour sharing. We do knowledge, if there is any knowledge between the two of us, we do knowledge sharing. And I was into that and I was like, 30 million, 10 million, 30 million over 3 years, 10 million a year to sort of work out how farmers can work better together. I was really excited about it. And then I started reading a bit more into it, and it seems like it's going to be a lot of knowledge exchange delivery, which to me seems like 30 million pounds that's going to go in somebody else's pocket and not necessarily into farmers. I don't know whether you picked up on this, Ben, whether you have a thought on it.
I think anything that you can do to promote those kind of, farmer clusters and bring farmers together, you're seeing it within quite a few areas, aren't you, where these kind of farmer clusters are coming together to apply for funding to create landscape scale change or habitats. And I actually think there's a real demand for it in a way. I think also, bringing farmers together to give them the excuse maybe actually to meet up and to talk and to have that kind of interaction is not a negative thing in any way. But if we bring it back to that issue that we spoke around before, around communication and the need to take policies and ensure that they're being driven from a farmer perspective. But yeah, I think anything like that has to be a good thing. But the challenge then is to ensure that government and others actually listen as well, because you can bring people together, but you don't want to just bring them together to be frustrated. They have to be able to have something to hook onto and to be able to utilize in a really meaningful way. So, but yeah, I listen from the bottom up always has to be better from my perspective. We just need those at the top to listen.
That's basically a very, very nice place to finish, Ben. I think I It's positive because things are being written. And we do now, we have whinged for a while that we have had no sort of guidance on what the long term looks like. We've got a document now that shows us what government believe the long term looks like. Whether we agree with it, disagree with it is now up to us. And whether we action the points that are within it, we can look at it or not read it at all and go, you know what, I'm just going to run my own business. And I would say the majority of people will, actually, if I'm honest. But we have now got a roadmap for the future. So we can now look at that and go, oh, I like this, I don't like that. And you know what, my business is better off by moving away from being managed by that, or my business is better off by targeting all of the things that they have pointed out. Maybe we can milk the system, if there is a system left to be milked by the end of it, no pun intended, sorry Soph. But it's a case of going, you know what, we have now a long-term strategy, we can disagree with it, but that is what they have written. Let's go and run our businesses to the best that we can and either run with it or completely ignore it and go and do what we believe is the best for our business going forward.
Absolutely, Ali. And I think it is that mindset bit. Communication and mindset are the things I've really pulled out of that. We need people like Ben, these communication gurus, to translate these documents. Experts, sorry. I prefer guru. I can imagine you meditating like this. We do need people that can translate these documents to us on the ground, and that is going to become key and carry on becoming key. So that role is essential. But also we need to work on ourselves as well in terms of our mindset. It's very, very easy for us to slump into when we're not in control of the big factors of our business, like climate, policy, price. We need to work on ourselves as farmers to keep in that positive mindset. It's a big challenge. And I know in this room, we have had challenges with that. So I think, you know, yes, those reports are great. They've come out. I really, really encourage you also to read the Oxford Farming Conference one. Louise Manning's is fantastic. It talks a lot about that mindset piece. I mean, mindset isn't going to put money in the bank, but it will help. So I just encourage those to go and look at that. But yeah, it's been a really interesting session. I think hearing from Ben's point of view on the comms, really, really important. And your cross-sector knowledge has brought a lot to this chat. And I think that people listening will have enjoyed that too.
No, thank you, guys. Pleasure as always. I'm not sure anybody really, though, Sophie, needed the image of me as a meditative guru, and that has certainly never been said before. So, you know, it's about mindset, it's about change. But I think just going back to your point, both of your points actually, it is really positive that we have these reports and that they do exist within government, because they really do focus on things like this, and it will anchor agriculture back into the debate. And let's hope that with the new government, we see more common sense towards agriculture, we see more empathy, and hopefully policies that are really going to move the industry forward in a positive manner.
Thank you, Ben. I imagine Dan is already photoshopping you onto a yoga mat as we speak for the cover of the reel for this piece. But yeah, no, absolutely, positivity, empathy, and yeah, bottom up, if it could be, with, I think is a perfect place to end. So thank you for coming on. Appreciate your time.
Meet the Farmers, The Big Debate is supported by TELUS Agriculture and Consumer Goods, the team that has brought together FarmPlan and Gatekeeper. Their ongoing investment equips farmers with the tools they need today and those they will need to face tomorrow's farming challenges. We're using their farm management software on our farm for spray plans, stock control, and much, much more. Designed to give you complete control of your data and simplify your day-to-day operations. Whether you are tracking your inputs, managing costs, or planning ahead, TELUS makes your business more efficient and informed. Find out more at telus.com/bigdebate. Once again, that's telus.com/bigdebate.
And our and finally section this week is Farm Safety Week. And we will be talking a little bit about what farm safety means to us on farm. But this is a national marker to really think about what we do on farm and remind us that the stark reality is it can be quite a dangerous place to work.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so important that we try and do better. Farming accounts for 1% of the working population, but we have an alarming 19% of all workplace deaths. And that's from the Fish Farming, Agricultural, Forestry and Fishing Report for 2024-25. we have to do better. It's such a sad statistic. We've had a very close one here. Well, not a very close one here on the farm, but we've had somebody sadly pass away in the last 2 weeks involved in an accident. Young lad, and the trail it leaves behind is terrifying. But it's not just Farm Safety Week isn't just about, you know, health and safety. Like, we're looking at field fires at the moment. The entire country is a tinderbox. The amount of black smoke that I've seen even round here has been terrifying. I've seen on social media across the board fires. Bartra Farm Girl saw one where she was trying to combine away from it, and they managed to put it out. They're just, everything is tinder dry. Interesting, actually, when I was looking at this, there's provinces in France, similar to counties in the UK, that have banned agricultural activities between midday and 7 o'clock at night to stop trying to reduce the fire risk. So yeah, you can't go out harvesting, you can't go out mowing, that sort of stuff between in the hours of the day. But what Yellow Wellies do as an organisation to promote this farm safety is really important. They do a really, really good job of it. It's quite somber when you start reading the statistics, as I've just done there, but without mentioning it, we're not going to get better. And it's really close to my heart in terms of, I want to make sure that when I walk out there every morning that I'm coming back. I think that's something that we need to all focus on. I think a few years ago when they first started this, they did that little piece of baler twine that you hung on your back door as a sort of promise to make sure you'd get home. And obviously accidents sadly happen. And especially at this time of year where everyone is under huge amounts of pressure. We've already spoken about the pressures that we're under in terms of farm and in terms of early starts. For me, I'm not used to dairy farmer hours. It affects me much more than it affects you, I think, so far. You hide it much better than I do. The 4 o'clock starts for me, I notice visibly my decision making gets worse by sort of 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And that sort of thing is really important to touch on. Yeah, Farm Safety Foundation, Yellow Wellies do a fantastic job of highlighting that. People are picking up on it, and it's something that we need to do better, and we need to carry on improving, and we need to carry on talking about it, because, yeah, it really matters to everybody.
Absolutely, Ali. And I think a lot of it is cultural change, isn't it? And I think we're seeing that. And I think Yellow Wellies make, you know, they do a really good job of making it cool to be safe. And I think that is a lot of it, you know, especially if you employ people and younger people, trying to get them to realise that's the normal, you know, things like high vis and helmets on quad bikes, you know, all the things that might a generation ago been quite a boring thing, not seen as essential, you know. They have really brought that to the forefront and done a really good job of that. And I think the thing with this hot weather and you guys in the arable sector at the moment is that it's our services aren't set up for this. So the demand on our services with, you know, the fire brigade, it's not a normal thing, is it? Farmer Aid, so RABI have created a really good app that has been launched, and there are some kits that are coming out with it, some trauma kits, but I really, really encourage everyone to download it. It gives you really good step-by-step emergency guidance. Obviously, it's not to replace a first aid course, and I encourage everyone to do first aid courses, but when you're in the moment and you don't know what to do, it's a really good step-by-step, open your phone up. And there are, yeah, some great trauma kits to come out with this. They're being released later in the year, and you can buy one for not too expensive, but that can save lives. So I think it's just even having this conversation, incorporating health and safety within your weekly meetings is just essential now. It's not an optional extra, it's essential. This is people's lives we're talking about.
Yeah, and livelihoods, like in terms of fire and bits and bobs, and trying to make sure that we do the right thing. These fires, well, I was chatting to Pete on the combine, as you do when you're there at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we were chatting about different bits of bobs. Like, he caught a stone on a mower, and that set the field on fire. That was 5 weeks ago now, and I fortunately saw it and put it out with a bottle of water. But you don't expect in the end of June for mowers to, like, combines, yes, they combust because sadly it's a lot of hot dust, but the mower is what set a grass field on fire. That's how dry everything is currently. He was also saying he worked in Romania actually for a while, and he was saying that in Romania it's a legal requirement that they have a water bowser where they're combining. So you have to have an ability to help put out fire before you start. So he's filled his slurry tanker with water and taken the dribble bar off and got a nozzle on. So if if the worst came to the worst, we could try. We've got a cultivator that's parked at the front of the shed that we could drop a trailer off and put a cultivator on. And it's just, it's simple things like that. And it's like insurance, isn't it? It's things you hope you'll never use. Hopefully he'll just empty his slurry tanker back into the lagoon and we won't have to worry about it. And I can put the cultivator at the back of the shed. But if you fail to prepare, you prepare to fail. But you know, if it's there and you can use it, then that hopefully means you'll never have to. If it's not there and then you're then wrestling 17 pieces of machinery to get to a cultivator to put fire out, then that's where you can end up in a bit of a pickle.
What a way to end the show. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed it.
I was just thinking, all of our stuff that we've talked about, and we're like, right, be positive. And you can just see on all of our faces, sadly, that where we all sit at the moment, it's just hard. And I think that's important. I think it's important to be real, right, on this, on what we do here. We talk to a lot of people every 2 weeks. So I know we want to be positive about everything, but I think it's important to be real. It's tough out there for everybody at the moment. And I think that's something that we should highlight. And that's why Farm Safety Week is so important. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting to watch this back, because it's been a lot.
So key takeaway is look after yourself and look after others as well. Thank you everyone for listening. Please subscribe to the show if you do not already, which I hope you do. Message us on socials and leave a comment below if you're watching on YouTube. You can also email us at thebigdebate@ruralpodmedia.co.uk. Please sign up to our mailing list using the link in the show notes. And thank you so much to our headline sponsors, Virgin Money, and our associate partners, Birkitts and Telus Agricultural and Consumer Goods. Please subscribe and share. We will be back with you in a couple of weeks. Until then, it's a goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to Meet the Farmers, The Big Debate. Our headline sponsor for this episode was Virgin Money, whose agricultural team has years of experience in supporting farmers up and down the UK. Meet the Farmers, The Big Debate is supported by UK top 50 law firm Birkitts. Birkitts expert lawyers can help you manage your estates, businesses and assets. From succession planning to environmental compliance, Birkitts offer practical tailored advice to your needs. Whether you're a landowner, farmer, or agribusiness specialist, the team can support you in achieving your goals and safeguarding your future. Find out more today at www.birkitts.co.uk/ag.